Hello, friends and listeners of the LeaderCast podcast. This is Mo, the producer, jumping on really quick before this episode starts to let you know that we are going to be wrapping up season one of the podcast. The final episode in season one will be coming out on April 23rd. We are going to be coming back with an even better season two later this year. Stay tuned on our socials for updates as we know more, and thank you for being an avid listener.
Yes, we need to self-manage. Yes, we need a vision. Yes, we need to be mindful. Yes, we need to manage our energy. Yes, we need to be generous. You know, and it's all got to go on at the same time. And we need to create internal or personal constructs that allow us to process that, because it's a lot. And we're not going to be great at all of it in 2 weeks. It's a life work, you know.
Welcome to the LeaderCast podcast, a weekly deep dive into the stories that transformed our guests into leaders worth following. I'm your host, Joe Boyd. If you've been enjoying the podcast, thank you so much for being a listener. One simple thing you can do to help us out is leave a review wherever you listen. Today's guest is Ari Weinzweig. He is the CEO and founding partner of Zingerman's Community of Businesses. Ari had a deep impact on my personal life last year, and that's why I invited him to speak at our LeaderCast event called GOAT coming up May 8th, and why he's on the podcast today. He calls himself a lapsed anarchist. So we'll just start with that and see where it goes. Hi, Ari Weinzweig. Welcome to the LeaderCast podcast. Super excited to have you today.
Happy to be with you.
We got to officially meet each other a week or two ago, and I've been so excited to talk to you more.
Well, honored to do it, man.
You are going to be a keynote speaker at our GOAT Greatest Habits of All Time event. It's coming up here May 8th for the folks that want to watch it on our platform. And I told you this in person, but I'll just all the cards on the table for me. My business partners and I stumbled upon your visioning process last year, and we did it with no adult supervision, just based off what we read in your book. And it actually, not an overstatement, radically changed the course of all three of our lives. So first of all, I just want to thank you for that. You'll be talking about that specifically at our event. It was quite selfish reasons that I wanted to meet you and get you at our event, because I figured if it could have that big of an effect on me, I wanted you to have the opportunity to share it with everyone as part of LeaderCast.
Yeah, no, I'm honored to do it. And it had that kind of effect on me too. So it's what you experienced is congruous with my own experiences with it.
I love it. So let's jump right into Russian literature major. Is that what you were?
Russian history.
How do you end up starting a delicatessen? Yeah. What happened?
Well, I could make up a lot of stories, but the true story is I'm from Chicago. I came here to Ann Arbor. It's about 4-hour drive east of Chicago, so it wasn't super far, but far enough to get away.
Yeah.
I came here for school. As you said, I studied Russian history. I also particularly studied anarchism, which we can get into or not, as you desire. I'd love to tell you this glamorous story about how my mom was an incredible cook, and we, you know, ate these magical meals. And from the time I was 10, I knew I was going to have my own restaurant. Like, I have a lot of friends in the food business who have a story like that, but I don't. My mother was a good person and a teacher, but not a great cook. Nobody in my family was in business, so I didn't even know you could go into business. It wasn't even something that was like on my mind. And I really consequently just lucked out. I stumbled into work that I really love. I work long days, but I still go home and cook something every night pretty much. So I started prepping and line cooking and managing kitchens. So for anybody listening that has worked in restaurants, or my background was all back of the house. And fall of 81, I'd been there almost 4 years. About 2 days after I'd given my 2 months notice in that job, November 1st, 81, I just decided, you know, it was perfectly fine, but it wasn't inspiring really. And I could sense where they didn't write a vision the way we do, but I could sense where they were going was not where we wanted, where I wanted to go. I don't know how we went this fast, but within like a week, we decided we would open. Needless to say, there were no like marketing studies or SWOT analyses. We just opened, and then March 15th, 1982, we opened. So next week, like I said, it'll be our 42nd anniversary.
Wow. It's hard to buzz past anarchism and not ask about it. So if we could go back, yeah. I know you call yourself a lapsed anarchist, right?
But yeah, I'm less and less lapsed as I re-immerse myself. So for years later would say I was a lapsed anarchist because I like everybody who's lapsed Catholic will get it. But yes. I still believed in it, but I had stopped practicing. And so I just started to reread all the stuff I had looked at in school. And it blew my mind. It's just there were so many parallels between what's now called progressive business and what the anarchists were writing about in 1900. You know, they go to jail. They were going to jail and Jim Collins got on the bestseller list, but there were really a lot of similarities. And a lot of their work was opposed to government, but that's not my focus. I'm fine with government. My focus is on how we apply it within the organization. It's a much, much, much smaller scale. But when you think about terms like self-organizing work teams, that's anarchism. When you think about treating everyone with dignity, that's anarchism. When you think about positive beliefs about people and human nature, that's anarchism. When you think about helping everybody to live their dreams, that's anarchism. So it's there's really quite a bit, employee engagement, not thinking hierarchically, flattening hierarchies. These are very embedded or implicit in a lot of what they were writing. So anyway, then I just started studying, and then I started writing about it. And there's anarchism woven into pretty much everything I've written.
Well, yeah, I think you're right. Most people do think of it as just kind of chaos or revolution. You know, when they hear that word, that's all they think of.
Yeah, well, it can be it is revolutionary, but it doesn't have to require violence. And yeah. It's also it's really a so there's one of the many writers that I read a lot of on my second go round after I was in school was Gustav Landauer. He was a German pacifist anarchist who was kicked to death by the German army in 1919. There were a lot of things that really helped me learning from him. One is that he said, we have no political beliefs. We have beliefs against politics. So don't get me wrong. I'll be voting in November 100%. But that said, it helped me realize it's not a political program. It's the opposite. It's a belief system.
Yeah.
Howard Ehrlich, who was an interesting late 20th century anarchist, said in one of his essays, he goes like, who will make the anarchist revolution? And he self-answered, you and I right now. So it's really about a way of life, and it's about how I treat you or the next person I run into, how I treat myself. It's not about taking power. It's about acting in a empowered and positive way every day. And so it's really a way to be in the world, not a way to seize authority from other people.
Yeah.
So that's pretty powerful. And then the other thing I got from him that blew my mind was he said, it's not that the people are in the state. It's that the state is in the people. And he said, as long as you try to resist negatively, you're locked in a relationship. And when I read that, I'm like, oh yeah, that's me and my mother. Like, you know, I push her away, but I'm still, it feels excited. Like you're resisting, but you're actually totally connected. And he said, the answer is not to destroy the state. The answer is to go create free communities where people can think freely and creatively on their own. And when I read that, I'm like, oh my God, that's what we're doing. Like, you know, we're just creating this imperfect, flawed space where people can think freely. So in that sense, like I'm the only one here who talks about anarchism. Well, actually there's a few people that work here that also would, but in general, like it's not written in anything we do, but as by name, but it's embedded in practice, I think, in a lot of the things we work at.
I know you talk a lot about, I think you use the phrase ecosystem or the word ecosystem.
I do.
Is that related to this, to what we're talking about now?
Well, everything's related to everything.
Sure.
What I would say is the ecosystem model is just another way to look at organizations. I have a new pamphlet coming out hopefully soon, trying to get it finished, but it's about dignity. But the next one after that will be on the ecosystem metaphor. And it's really just the way that we process the world is, you know, whatever, 90% through metaphors.
Yeah.
And we don't often know it. Like, I don't think about them all either. But when you start when one starts paying attention, you realize quickly, like, almost everything we say involves metaphors. So people say stuff like, well, that really went south.
Yes.
But it's like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
And why do we say it? So the standard business metaphors are generally, I would suggest, commonly used. I've used them many times, but they're not very helpful. Business as a machine, not very human. Business as an army, dominant, beat the cup, not very helpful. Sports, kudos to sports, but business is, it's not about winning by one point at the end of the day. Like there's it's just a whole nother world. So when I look at it like an ecosystem, then you understand implicitly, like I just said, everything's related. You understand that it's not a 6-week course.
Yeah.
It's for the rest of your life. You understand implicitly, like you can't change the soil in 3 weeks. Like you could fire the farmer, but the soil's not going to be any different. And in the metaphor, the culture is the soil. So when people want to change the organizational culture, it's like, dude, you can't just truck in a new soil. Like it takes years to rebuild it, And anyway, so it just allowed me a much more holistic way to look at organizations and my own life, and then realize like we all have a little ecosystem in our head. And of course, what you put into your ecosystem stays there for a while. Like when you pump pesticides on plants, it doesn't just go on the plant. It washes off into this cultural soil, and then it doesn't just disappear the next day. It's there for decades. So.
Developing world-class leaders in your community is now easier than ever with LeaderCast. In addition to our flagship May event, becoming a presenting partner allows you to stream multiple events per year, each with an opportunity to earn money. The new LeaderCast lets you invite 1 to 1,000 people with unlimited streaming opportunities. Check out more at LeaderCast.com or the link in our bio. I love this. I'm a religion major, by the way. So we're both using our degrees currently.
It's all related, dude.
But one of the things that I think I learned through those studies was that the things that are the most true in life are only described by metaphor. So things like love or joy or whatever, there's have metaphors for that because it's so true. It can't be confined to sort of literalism,
Nice.
Thank you.
No wonder we're getting along.
So you're going to talk about visions. I don't want to spend a lot of time on it, but because it did impact me so much, can you talk about how you encountered the vision work that you did for
Absolutely.
Yourself?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's in the Story of Visioning pamphlet, Story of Visioning at Zingerman's pamphlet, which came out, 18 months ago. So when we opened, well, two things I'll say. So in part one of the Zingerman's Guide to Good Leading books, there's a number of essays about visioning. There's also an essay called 12 Natural Laws of Business. And the first one on the list is that all healthy, thriving organizations, small, large, nonprofit, for-profit, doesn't matter, they all have a vision. They may not write it the way we now do, but they have one in their head. In hindsight, I also realized that's actually just a normal human process. So anybody who's achieving at a high level of their own choosing, not just by responding to social pressure, but whether it's in parenting or it's in poetry or a professional basketball player, like they've all imagined this future that they're going to. And when Paul and I opened the deli, we didn't know anything about the visioning process the way we now do, the way I wrote about it and you read about it. But we had one in our heads or we would never have made it.
Yeah.
It's the first, year. So we knew from the beginning we wanted someplace special. We knew we wanted great food, great service, great place for people to work. And we knew we wanted to do it in a very down-to-earth setting. And then we also knew from the beginning we only wanted one. I'm very big on unique things. I'm not saying other people shouldn't open multiple units, but it's not for me.
Yeah,
like the originals. So anyway, when we opened, that was really what was in our heads. People told us we were crazy. Ann Arbor wouldn't support a deli. It was a bad place to open. There's no parking. Yada, yada, yada. 6 years later, we were geniuses. Everybody knew from the beginning we were going to do well, et cetera, et cetera. Fast forwarding, we added on to the The original space was only 1,300 square feet, so very small. We added on a little 700 square foot space in 1986, so that was our fourth year in business. And then we added on, we renovated the old house next door. They're not connected, but we renovated and we had to go outside because we're in a historic district. So anyway, so that was 1991. Fast forwarding again to 93, so we were about 11 years in business. One morning, I don't know, 10 o'clock when I, you know, should have been inside getting the sandwich line ready for the lunch rush. Paul sat me down on the little bench in front of the deli and he kind of looks at me and he goes, okay, in 10 years, what are we doing? And I'm like, what? He's like, in 10 years, what are we doing? I'm like, Paul, I don't know what we're doing in 10 years. He goes, well, I mean, you know, it's like we said, we're only going to open one. So we've already turned down offers from other cities and we won't open other spots. So people are opening on campus because they can see that we're doing a lot of business. Like, you know, I'm like, he goes, what are we doing? I'm like, I don't know, man, I got work to do. And he's like, no, this is work. So I know him well enough now to know that he probably couldn't sleep for 3 or 4 months worrying about it. What he was asking in our current language is, what's your long-term vision? I didn't have one. I don't think he had one either, but what he did have is a very good intuitive sense that we had essentially fulfilled the original vision.
Yeah.
It's akin to what you might call midlife, or what John O'Donohue, the Irish theologian and philosopher, would call a threshold. It's where you've sort of worked your butt off to get somewhere that you kind of thought you could get there, but you weren't really sure. It was a ton of work. You got there and you're, on the one hand, it's like, awesome, we got there. But then you're like, oh yeah, it's only the beginning. So anyway, Paul's question started like a year long argument, discussion, conversation with a lot of frustration coming back to the table, swear words and eye rolls and whatever. But during that time is when we met Stash Kazmierski, and he passed away. It'll be 6 years in May, so not long after I'm at your event speaking about visioning. But and then through Stash's insight and help that year is when we wrote our first vision, and it was called Zingerman's 2009. So if people are quick at math, we finished it in 94. We actually went 15 years in the future, not 10. And that was our first experience with it. And again, that's in the story of visioning at Zingerman's pamphlet.
Yeah.
Since then, now it's like embedded in everything that we do. So our vision organizationally now for 2032 is like 10 pages long. It's a story. It's a story of your future as you want the future to be, written as if it's already happened. So it's an affirmation, I guess. Yeah. You could say.
So as a leader, I wonder, you also have a personal vision, right? So is it, if you think of your average leader, is it important to have your personal vision kind of mapped out or understood, or
well,
how do you differentiate?
It depends
between
on who you are and where you're at.
Yeah.
The first time you draft something, it could include both.
Yeah.
In one.
Yeah.
And then later you can go back and separate it out because your employees don't need to know about your relationship with your adult children.
Yeah.
But the first time you're drafting, it doesn't really matter. I mean, okay. I would say it's more important to start writing than it is to worry about exactly how to construct it, because the way we do it, it's always a draft in the beginning and it might go through.
Yeah.
It's the common misconception is that we're asking people to figure out what they want and then write it down. But given, as you experienced when you did it, the hot pen process, which if somebody's an English major is just called free writing in that world, is you're not figuring it out by and then writing it. You're figuring it out by writing it.
Yeah.
It's the writing that brings it to the surface. What's in it is fluid, but you're putting yourself at a particular day in the future and then writing, if you're really doing it for like 45 minutes, if you're doing something for your life or your business, straight through. So the key of the hot pen is it's like riding a bicycle. If you stop pedaling, it falls over.
Yes.
So you got
to keep going.
So you can write curse words or the, you know, Cincinnati Bengals starting lineup or whatever y'all like to write. But the key is if you stop writing and hold your pen and think, it generally doesn't work.
We're running short of time. I have 1,000 questions to ask you, but luckily and foolishly of you, you gave me your email address. So I'll just ask all the questions I want to ask personally. If you project out to your current vision is complete and you're out in the future and some young buck finds you and you're sitting on a park bench feeding pigeons, and they say, hey, old timer, what's the secret? What's it all about? What do you think you would say?
Well, I would say the secret is there's no secret. I mean, it's, there's just a lot of practices that go into it. And the hierarchical thinking, coming back to where we started with the anarchism. So most of us, in me included, in this Western world are trained to think hierarchically. And most of us don't even know what that is. I wrote a pamphlet on humility, and I was saying, like, the hierarchical thinking is like the story of the two fish swimming along, talking, and they see another fish, and I don't know, the first one says to the second one, like, man, he's like a fish out of water. And the second fish goes, what's water? So hierarchical thinking is like that. Like, it's so endemic in the U.S. that we don't even know we're doing it. So, like, if you go on your news feed, it's going to have, like, top 10 tips for homeowners, top five, Michael Jordan's biggest play ever. And it's all about the most important, the worst, the biggest, the best. But it's just like life's actually not like that. And so one of the many reasons I like the ecosystem model is because it reminds you that you're the farmer. Like, the farmer can't just, like, work on soil health for 3 years and then later come back and worry about watering.
Yeah. Yeah.
you need it all to happen at once. And yeah, of course you might spend a little more time on one thing or the other, but if you ignore all the other things. So in the ecosystem, the culture, as I said, is the soil, the beliefs are the roots, the sun is hope, generosity is water, purpose is air. Like, you need this whole thing. And my girlfriend's a farmer. I mean, she can't just only plant. Like, you have to.
Yes.
And so people are looking for the one answer, but then they try that, and then of course it won't work because they needed 20 other things at the same time. And so I guess for me, it's, yes, we need to self-manage. Yes, we need a vision. Yes, we need to be mindful. Yes, we need to manage our energy. Yes, we need to be generous, and it's all got to go on at the same time. And we need to create internal or personal constructs that allow us to process that, because it's a lot.
Yeah.
And we're not going to be great at all of it in 2 weeks. It's a life work,
How do you help leaders in your organization battle sort of exhaustion or because what you're saying resonates is very true. It's also really hard to be a farmer. Like, it's exhausting. Like, how does I think the idea that that there is so much to do can sometimes be emotionally overwhelming for a lot of folks.
It's kind of weird. Like, we only have these two words. You're either underwhelmed or you're overwhelmed. Like,
whelmed.
Where's the middle?
Yeah, I want to be whelmed.
So people are like, I'm overwhelmed. It's like, okay, dude, like, that's too late. Like, you need to know that you were starting to whelm up.
Yeah.
You got to back off. Like, if you wait till you're overwhelmed, it's not helpful. It's better than nothing. But there's self-awareness that allows you to realize, like, okay, whoop, slow down a little, So I also have come to believe that worrying about being overwhelmed is a lot of what exhausts people. Anybody who's achieving high levels gets tired. Michael Jordan in the playoffs, a musician that's great on their 33rd tour date in 40 days, tired, but a parent of little kids, they're tired, but they find a second win. I think what I look at is more, I would suggest burnout mostly comes not from how much you work, but whether you're doing work that you believe in. And when people work a lot of hours at work they don't believe in, it's exhausting and there's no energy coming in. So the way I look at it is not really how much time I spent on something, but the energy impact of whatever I do.
Yeah.
So I'm tired right now, but talking to you is energizing. After this, I'm going to go home and run. I'm tired, but I'm going to go run anyway. Yeah. It's energizing. When I'm working on writing or interacting with people. So I've tried to structure my life so, like, 90% of it is energy building.
Yeah. That makes sense.
And most people, they're counting hours, but it's like, you know, watching football, which I used to do a lot, and I'm not saying this as a criticism, but I realized like I'm spending half my day watching this game that I have zero impact on. It just leaves me depressed at least half the time, if not more. And I could just look at the score later and it's exactly the same as if I didn't watch, right. You know? So I'm not saying as a judgment, I just made a decision for me, like I'm not going to watch because I can do all these other things that are not just distracting. They actually build my energy.
Yeah.
You know? And I think there's a lot of that in our lives. Like we spend time with stuff that's not energy building.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that, you know, it's, we're both, of an age where the world changed so much as we've been alive. And then I think of like my kids who are in their 20s that, yeah. But when you were talking about the list of top 10, this and top five, that, and the algorithms have gotten so good, that it was always human nature to want those things. But now they're just, it's just so prevalent on our phones and everything that it's hard.
Yeah.
It is like a hypnotistic, like you're hypnotized and you just can't stop at times and you can't really think about what matters. It's like the football game that never ends,
you
right?
You can. It's not, I don't think it is human nature. I think it's just how we're trained. Okay. And when you're trained that way, it's not, your brain is an ecosystem, not software. So you can't just download some new software and it all goes away. Like we have, however old we are, a lifetime of learning that, and it's all around us, right? And I get asked those questions and every, you know, and, you know, without getting into political preference, you could see it in a way politics is getting covered. Like all they talk about is who's winning.
Yeah.
But there's almost no conversation about issues, regardless of where you are on the issues, who's win. It's like missing the point,
yes.
You know, and then the same happens in business. Like who's got the biggest market share, but they don't talk about like how the employee feels until there's a big crisis.
Yeah. Yes. Well, sir, here at LeaderCast, we want to be the folks to talk about those things. And that's why we've invited you on. And thank you so much for your time. I'll let you go run and get some energy. We can't wait to hear you. I'm super, super excited to meet you in person here coming up in a couple months.
Yeah.
Ari, if folks want, you've mentioned several pamphlets and books. Folks want any of your stuff, what should they do?
Well, we are off the grid. One of the other important things of beliefs of anarchism is that the means you use need to be congruent with the ends you want to achieve. So in other words, the way you go about it has to be compatible with what you want to have happen. So we sell our books. We're sort of like farm to table. So we do all the design here. So like tonight, I'll be proofing this Dignity pamphlet for the 9 millionth time, as we try to get it wrapped up. So the best way to get them is on zingermanspress.com.
Okay.
Or zingtrain.com. My email is ari@zingermans.com. And, you know where to get it, but you could put the link to the e-news that I do every week. That's another good way to sort of keep in my mental loop.
Okay. Awesome. We'll put those links under our podcast as well. So,
yeah, awesome.
Great. Thank you, Ari. Looking forward to meeting you in a little bit.
See you soon. All right. Have a great day.
In today's ultra-competitive job market, top-tier talent are leaving companies in search of top-tier professional development. Now more than ever, you must invest in your emerging leaders. LeaderCast 365 is a world-class professional development system featuring access to 3 annual LeaderCast events, a post-event journey to activate the inspiration and insights gained from LeaderCast events, plug-and-play lunch and learn programs with group discussion questions, concise video courses to address weaknesses and build upon strengths, and our library of more than 1,200 short-form videos from a slate of industry experts organized into 16 key professional development categories. Invest in your all-star employees and attract new top talent to join them with LeaderCast 365.